The opinions expressed in this show are the views of the host and not necessarily that of WTRW, 94.3 The Talker, or the Bold Gold Media Group.
The following presentation is paid for by Century 21 Jack Ruddy Real Estate, who is solely responsible for its content. Portions transcribed.
All Century 21 real estate offices are independently owned and operated.
Hi, I'm Jackie Ruddy, broker of Century 21 Jack Ruddy Real Estate. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundtable on 94.3 FM The Talker. I'm here with my co-host and husband, Pat Devaney.
Good morning, Jackie. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, we are with today lots of people. Three people are on the line here. Some are going to talk, some are just observing. We have Maurice Gardner, Senior Civil Engineer in District Mining Operations. We have Michael Bodner, Manager of the Mine Subsidence Section in California District Office. And we have Patty Monahan, Regional Communications Manager with DEP. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for being here with us. We are here every Saturday at 11 a.m., Sunday at 11:30 a.m. We discuss everything real estate. We have a full-time real estate office with many exceptional realtors who've been listing, selling, and appraising real estate for over 50 years.
During the week, feel free to email us with any questions you have at questions@jruddy.com. That's questions@jruddy.com. Or you can give us a call at 570-344-6724. And when you go to jruddy.com, click on the webcam tab. We have, for Patty, we have a webcam on top of the building looking at Dunmore Corners. So if you want to see what's going on in Dunmore, just go to our website. You can check it out.
View our listings, search MLS listings, and listen to archive radio shows by going to mobilefriendlyjruddy.com. That's J-R-U-D-D-Y.com, where you can also view all the podcast apps that we feature this radio show on and check us out on social media. Okay, Maurice Gardner, Michael Bodner, Patty Monahan, good morning again to all of you. Thanks again for being here. We're going to talk about a very interesting topic.
What, that when we got on the radio and you found out that you went to grammar school with Patty? I thought that was very interesting.
Yes, very interesting. And Patty and I have known each other a long time, right, Patty?
Yes, we have.
Thank you for being a part of the show today. We're going to talk about mine subsidence insurance and why people that are from this area should consider having it. And it's a topic that we haven't talked about in some time, but it's relative to what's going on in the area. We've seen some situations. A major roadway in our area had a sinkhole, and there was a sinkhole in our little town of Dunmore, where I'm from. And so it just seems to be happening and a lot lately.
Right. You go down Interstate 80, it was closed because there were sinkholes from mine subsidence. So I don't know if the state has insurance on their own highways, but
yeah,
it was pretty bad down there.
Gentlemen, how did that work and how did that play out?
Well, PennDOT would be responsible for the repairs on any state roads.
Okay, so each state takes care of its own roads.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. There's federal funding that's allotted to each state through mining from the federal government, the Office of Surface Mining, but each individual state handles their own
problems, I guess.
Right. Yep. So what about the sinkhole that opens up in a backyard and someone doesn't have mine subsidence insurance? What happens there? Because that whole block had, the surrounding homes, from my understanding, had to be evacuated. I mean, because it's a stability issue, right? Anything can happen at that point when something opens up.
Sinkholes are subsidence that occurs on land, somebody's private property. Those issues are handled by a department agency called the Bureau of Abandoned Mine Reclamation. So, for example, the sinkhole that opened in Dunmore is a health and safety issue, obviously. So the Bureau of Abandoned Mine Reclamation, or BAMR, would fill that sinkhole to eliminate the health and safety risk. However, BAMR is not able to address structure damage issues. So that's where the DEP's mine subsidence insurance program comes into play. We make available insurance for homeowners to purchase to protect their structures from mine subsidence damage.
So who should get mine subsidence insurance? Could everybody or anybody or just people that are over a mine?
Yes, any homeowner or building owner that is located above an abandoned mine in Pennsylvania is eligible to apply for mine subsidence insurance. And those owners can go to our website, dep.pa.us/MSI, for mine subsidence insurance, and they can enter their address on our website, and it will bring up an interactive map that shows them whether or not their property is undermined. And any structure that is undermined, we recommend that those owners obtain low-cost mine subsidence insurance that is offered through the state.
So their homeowner's insurance policy would not cover any of this?
Virtually no homeowner's policies cover mine subsidence damage. In fact, I'm only aware of one private insurance company that offers it as a rider. But in general, no. Homeowner's insurance does not cover any type of damage from mine subsidence.
What is covered with mines?
Something to add, Jackie, would be that our insurance program versus a private insurance program, the cost would be drastically different. Our rates are much, much lower and affordable for the people. And I don't know the exact limitations to their coverage, but a lot of times in the past, I found that they don't cover as much as we do as well at a higher rate.
So to do a rider on an insurance policy with your homeowner's insurance company would cost more and cover less is what I'm hearing.
Yep.
Okay. So what is covered and what isn't covered with mine subsidence insurance?
So what is covered is, well, obviously structure damage that occurs from mine subsidence. That can be damage to your foundation walls, your basement floor, plaster cracks, drywall cracks, cracks to flooring. Any damage that occurs to the structure that is from mine subsidence. And since 2012, the insurance policy also covers earth movement that may be caused from an unexpected and sudden outbreak of mine water. So if we have a time period where we have excessive precipitation, the abandoned deep mines can fill up with water, and they do fill up with water, and we do have outbreaks of that mine water, and that can cause land movement issues that can damage homes. So that is also covered by the insurance policy. In addition, if the structure, if the insured structure is damaged by mine subsidence, what we call appurtenant structures are also covered if they are damaged by mine subsidence. That would include items like driveways, paved patios, in-ground swimming pools, and retaining walls.
Decks? Sheds?
Well, if the deck is attached to the structure, then it is considered part of the insured structure. Structures like sheds and detached garages require a separate policy through our program. So each individual structure, the way our program is, requires a policy. So if you own a home and you have a detached garage, you should get two policies, one for your house and one for your detached garage.
And the cost of the policy, I have it at home, and I think we have a $450,000 worth of coverage, and it's like $125 a year. Well, you're gonna that's peanuts. It's downright cheap.
It is affordable, especially compared to other coverage.
Compared to other coverage, it's a bargain. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I tell people the cost of going out to dinner one night with your wife would cover your house for the entire year.
That's the truth.
Well, probably less these days, Maurice. Right?
Yeah.
Honestly. Especially if you have a couple drinks.
Yeah, I was talking to my insurance guy because this came up a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I said, how much mine subsidence insurance should I get? And he says, well, you take the replacement cost of what it would cost to replace your home, and then you add 20%. And I looked it up, and boy, prices have gone up a lot. So it's a lot. I'm not going to get into specifics, but would you think that that's a good formula?
Yeah, that is what we recommend. Whatever homeowners carry on their homeowners insurance is a good starting point. And then we recommend adding 10 to 20% to that coverage amount to account for coverage for the appurtenant structures. And you're right, especially over the last 5 years, construction costs have really increased. It even surprises me when we have supported claims. Obviously, we have never failed to pay out on a supported claim. The program has. And the repair costs, they can be significant. Most oftentimes for supported claims, the repair costs are in the six figures. They almost always exceed $100,000 at this point.
I would agree with that. Let's go back to the appurtenant structures. What about pool houses? That would be separate sheds and a pool. Did you even mention a pool?
In-ground swimming pools are considered an appurtenant structure. Above-ground swimming pools are not covered by terms of the policy and would not be insurable. A pool house or a shed, as long as it's a separate structure with walls, a roof, and is affixed to the ground, is an insurable structure and would require an individual policy.
Okay, so what about a garage that isn't connected to, isn't attached? It's detached from the house but is connected by a walkway or a breezeway. How would that be viewed?
If it's connected by a breezeway to the home, then the policy for the home would cover the detached garage. As long as there's some physical connection via a breezeway or the roof, then it can be considered one structure.
Gotcha.
If it's just connected by a sidewalk and it's two separate structures, that would require two separate policies.
All right. So as you were talking about how the structure is covered, if there's any structural damage and cracks and so on and so forth, there's natural shifting of the earth all the time. It moves, right? So do our houses, and there's cracks that occur. So how does one determine if it's from a subsidence issue, a mine subsidence issue, or just earth stability?
Well, when homeowners have a concern about their house, they would file a claim with us, and that just initiates the investigation process. So we would have an engineer, like Maurice in the anthracite region, to come out and do an investigation to make a determination whether or not mine subsidence has impacted the structure and caused the damages that the homeowner is concerned about. So when we're doing an investigation, we are looking for a pattern of movement that we would expect to occur with mine subsidence. And depending on how deep that coal mine is, how far below the surface, that dictates what subsidence is going to look like or how it's going to manifest on the surface. When that deep mine is shallow, say generally 50 feet or less depth of cover or 50 feet or less deep, subsidence usually presents as a sinkhole, which is what we had recently in Dunmore.
Right.
That's a localized, abrupt vertical displacement that suddenly occurs. Generally, when the mine is maybe more than 50 feet or 70 feet deep, subsidence typically manifests as in what we call a subsidence trough, which is a more broad, almost dinner plate, circular or elliptical depression that suddenly forms on the surface. Most of that movement still is vertical, and there's also a horizontal component with that. So that's what renders houses to go out of level. We have that differential settlement that can occur with mine subsidence. And I mean, unfortunately, when I'm driving through the Northeast on occasion and we go through the towns, it's not that uncommon to see houses that are visibly out of level. And I suspect most of those cases, if not all of them, those houses were damaged by mine subsidence at some point in the past.
I could think of a few houses in particular when you say that. When I drive through a neighborhood, they just look
crooked
because there's two of them, one next to the other. One of them is out of whack because they're much closer at the top than they are at the bottom. So, wow. I could listen to you guys all day.
This is fascinating.
This is really good. This is fascinating.
Yes. With us today, Maurice Gardner, Senior Civil Engineer, District Mining Operations, Michael Bodner, Manager of the Mine Subsidence Section in California District Office. And that's not California, the state. That's California, PA, right, Mike?
That is correct. It's about 20 miles south of Pittsburgh. So most of our engineering unit is in the California District Office, and we handle the bituminous area, which is western Pennsylvania. And Maurice Gardner is in our Wilkes-Barre office, and Maurice is our lone guy up there. He handles the entire anthracite region.
Wow. Do you feel like you carry the weight of our area on your shoulders? Because you do.
Sometimes. I actually cover the Wilkes-Barre office's territory, and I also cover the Pottsville office's territory.
Well, you're a busy guy then. Because we do have our fair share of mines in our area, correct?
Certainly do. Yeah, pretty much all of the valley towns and cities running, starting at Forest City north of Carbondale, right down through to the other side of Wilkes-Barre into Hazleton. Most of the valley cities are undermined, and those cities really have developed into what they are because of mining being here and people coming here to work when the mines were in operation. During the Great Depression, you know, our area was booming for mining, you know, to mine coal and provide the steel factories also as well. You know, during the World Wars and all of that time frame, you know, the high demand for steel products and coal mining were the two main things, you know, Pittsburgh steel and anthracite coal.
Right. Our area was booming at that time. Okay, before we go to break, Pat, would you like to review a listing, please?
Yes, we have a longstanding tavern. It's in West Granton at 1024 Jackson Street for $275,000. This commercial property, it has two residential units on the second floor. One is occupied, the other is vacant. It's a prime location, and the valuable liquor license is included in the sale. This is perfect for the investor or if you ever wanted to own your own bar. That's a bar with a liquor license and two apartments at 1024 Jackson Street in Scranton for $275,000. And that's listed by Gail Lewis of our office.
Thank you, Pat. Stay with the Real Estate Roundtable with Century 21, Jack Reddy Real Estate, and 94.3 FM The Talker. We'll be right back.
Home. It's more than just walls and a roof. It's where laughter echoes, where memories are made, and where life truly happens. At Century 21 Jack Ruddy Real Estate, we know that finding the right home isn't just about real estate. It's about finding your place in the world. With trusted agents, unmatched experience, and a commitment to your dreams, we're here to guide you every step of the way. Because at Century 21 Jack Ruddy Real Estate, we're not just selling houses, we're delivering the joy of home. Find your perfect home today. Call 570-344-6724 or go to jruddy.com. That's J-R-U-D-D-Y.com. Century 21 Jack Ruddy Real Estate. Dream big. Move boldly. Each Century 21 office is independently owned and operated.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Roundtable. I'm Jackie Ruddy, broker, and with Pat Devaney, my husband, fellow realtor.
And we're back.
We're back. This is where we talk about issues that matter to homeowners, buyers, and sellers. Today, we're discussing a topic that doesn't always make headlines, but it should. And sometimes it does, even locally, mine subsidence. Many homeowners don't realize the ground beneath their property could shift or sink due to abandoned underground mines, causing costly damage. We're breaking it all down, what it is, and how to find out if your property is vulnerable, and the steps you can take to protect your biggest investment. We're joined by Michael Bodner, manager of the Mine Subsidence Section in California District Office, and Maurice Gardner, senior civil engineer with District Mining Operations, and Patty Monahan in the background, regional communications manager with DEP. Let's go back to discussing mine subsidence. And what was your question, Pat?
The maps. I had a friend of mine, he was an engineer, and he says, yeah, they have the maps of the mind. He says, but you know, they're written 100, 125 years ago. He says, they're not that accurate. He says, because sometimes I find things or whatever. What do the experts have to say?
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with the characterization that the maps are not accurate. If you look at the old mind maps, they are very detailed as far as what the maps depict, showing the coal pillars, the entries, the areas that were mined. They're really pieces of art. They were all hand-drawn, and really they can be very interesting to look at. The detailed mind maps that we have extensive mapping for the anthracite region. My opinion is the maps are accurate. What may be inaccurate would be areas perhaps where the mapping for those areas was lost over time, or maybe the last map for an area was destroyed or is not available to us anymore. You know, this mining occurred long, long ago, and things happen. Things can be lost. Things can be destroyed. But the extensive mapping that is available, the mapping is accurate. If the maps are showing an area that is undermined, then yes, the area is undermined.
Maurice?
Yeah, I would have to completely agree with you, Mike. Me dealing with the anthracite region firsthand on a daily basis, the mapping that we do have, it's proven itself to be quite accurate. Where air shafts are depicted, on a map, I've had, and geo-referenced surface areas have almost perfectly lined up. Depths, elevations, all that kind of stuff has proven itself with drilling projects and logs that have occurred. The northern coal field seems to have the most extensive and detailed mapping, where there is some inconsistencies in the southern coal fields down in the Pottsville, Minersville, those towns a little bit. But especially the northern field, which incorporates your whole listening area here, Lackawanna, Luzerne County, the southern part of Susquehanna, all those counties that they're in the listening area here, there's pretty extensive mining that has. I've been doing this for 15 years, and it's over the time has proven itself accurate. As Mike said, that one thing that may be a little inconsistent would be the extent of mining, where the mapping shows mining ended, possibly it were to extend a little bit beyond those boundaries. But other than that, they're very detailed. And like you said, with them being all hand-drawn, it's kind of an art form of its own.
All right. So your final answer is the maps are accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I have another question. What's the average depth that they mine at? Is it, because you said less than 50 feet. I was like, well, that seems awfully close to the surface to me.
Yeah, the mining can be right at the surface even. I have been in homes in western Pennsylvania where there is actually a door in the basement that is right in the coal seam.
I've heard of this. I thought it was an urban myth. Go ahead.
No, people way back when had that door in their basement, and when they needed coal, they opened the door and they mined some coal off to heat their house.
Wow.
Get down there, little Johnny. Start mining some coal. I'm freezing.
Yeah, of course we don't recommend that. Never enter an abandoned mine.
No.
It's not safe at all. But people did it.
And Maurice, you've seen it too in our area?
Yeah, I've seen it in this area. One that comes to mind particularly was in Duryea.
Oh, wow. That I have not come across.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, the underneath the front porch of the home, there was basically like you'd see a manhole in the street, like a steel cover. And they had ran a power wire down and had a light switch there with a bulb on the end of it. And you would open up the manhole, climb down the ladder, turn the light on, and get the coal you needed. And they had a pulley up on one of the porch beams that they would pull the bucket of coal up out of it.
And this was completely legit?
No, I mean, it wasn't like as far as them having any right. kind of permit to do it. I mean, the person wasn't currently doing it.
No.
Just the access was there from the prior owners to the home.
Right. It was their way to get coal.
Free coal.
Free yep. coal. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say that mine was probably 18 to 20 feet below the house, so they had a ladder that went down into the mine.
Oh, my God.
And when a lot of this abandoned mining in Pennsylvania occurred, you know, through the 1800s, early 1900s, there were very limited or no mining laws
mm-hmm.
governing that mining.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha. Very, that's fascinating.
That's interesting, right?
Very. Yeah. I didn't realize this. Okay. So we talked in the first half of the show about what's covered, what isn't. And, you know, in terms of personal contents of the home, furniture, things of that nature, are they covered?
No, personal contents are not covered. I have very rarely, if ever, seen damage to personal contents. But for example, if a subsidence event were to occur and your television fell off the wall, the television would not be covered by our policy. So personal contents are not covered. But I have to say, I've never encountered a situation where there's been damage to personal contents. Of course, everything related to the structure itself, you know, the damage to the wall or the floor, that is covered by the policy. Maurice, have you ever seen an event where we've actually seen damage to personal contents?
No, personally, I've never had any personal contents really damaged. I've had some issues where furnaces and water heaters were compromised as far as we needed to disconnect them and remove them to do the repair work we needed to and then reinstall them, which all of that would be covered.
Yeah.
I've seen things where I've actually had subsidence. One that comes to mind in Pittston, the house shifted enough that it snapped the granite countertops right in half in the kitchen. We would replace the countertops, all those kind of things. But if your KitchenAid mixer was impacted, that wouldn't be covered. But we put new countertops in to put it back on.
Okay. Well, this was a very good discussion with you both. Michael Bodner, manager of the Mine Subsidence Section in California District Office. Maurice Gardner, senior civil engineer, District Mining Operations. Thank you so much for being here with us today, and we'd love to have you back next week.
That sounds great.
Well, thank you for having us, Jackie, and it would be great to come back next week.
Thank you. Pat?
Yes, we have a grand old home with 4 bedrooms and 2 baths at 1008 Sunset Street in Scranton for $329,000. This home has hardwood floors and gleaming original woodwork. It has a beautiful gas fireplace, a huge living room. It has a nice rear yard with a 2-car garage, a new roof, and 4 floors of living space with a partially finished basement. That's a 4-bedroom, 2-bath home in the Green Ridge section of Scranton at 1008 Sunset Street for $329,000. And that's listed by Paul Mackerel of our office.
Thank you, Pat. How much does summer cost homeowners? 3 in 5 said that summer is the most expensive season for them. 78% said that it is worth the high cost. And this is according to America Home Shield. In the Northeast, average monthly summer home costs total about $800. And this is the breakdown. Number one, the highest cost is electricity, followed by water, followed by landscaping, then pool maintenance, and then fifth is grill supplies. For the entire summer, costs in the Northeast averaged a total of $7,400, with the breakdown as monthly home costs being the first, travel coming in second, childcare and camps third, gardening fourth, and DIY projects fifth, and parties and cookouts coming in at the last spot there. After the West, this is the second highest total cost of summer by region. Did
really?
You know that?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I know summer's expensive, though.
Yeah, well, travel.
Yeah, I love to travel.
Mm-hmm. Mark your calendars. We'll be back next weekend, Saturday at 11 a.m., Sunday at 11:30 a.m. for more Real Estate Roundtable with Century 21 Jack Ready Real Estate on 94.3 FM The Talker.